Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the f*** are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up, actually a little more than this. They're up 4, NASDAQ futures up 15, Dow futures up 30. We're starting to move up a little here a little bit in the last few minutes. We will keep you apprised. We were down yesterday, but nowhere near what we were down when we were doing the show, and we actually went down lower later and then didn't stay there and came up, but almost were up on the close. And Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I woke up this morning. What more do I need out of life?
Now, if you were Walter Brennan, you would say you woke up this morning, you picked up the paper, you checked the obituaries, and you didn't see your name, and now you're going to work.
Yeah, there I am.
Remember the Twilight Zone?
Going to work means staying home.
Well, remember the Twilight Zone episode where the guy did see his name? Because he wanted tomorrow's newspaper today. First thing he did was look at the obits, and there he was. That was
not
good.
The first thing I'd look at.
No, that would not be good, you know. What do you mean? It's the Irish singles, right?
Yeah, but there's just, you know, what do I want to know that's in tomorrow's newspaper? Well, that's not the thing I want to know. So I would definitely focus on at least getting some sports bets down before I decided I was going to die.
Did you ever
got to take care of the heirs? You know.
Well, that's another issue. But may you ever hear that term? the obituaries or the Irish singles ads or something?
No, I haven't, but that's pretty funny.
Let's see, that guy Croak, she was pretty hot. He's not that old. I better go to this wake, see what she looks like.
Yeah, and you know what? The older we Irish get with that, the more the field opens up.
Oh, yeah. It's unbelievable. With the is this time we're actually going to be saved by gambling? This is the fourth time in my lifetime that the gambling save is in. Is this one for sure?
Oh, cool. What's happening?
We're being saved by sports betting. The taxes, the cities, the casinos, everybody's going to be flush.
Some new initiative, or is just that someone needed something to deflect, and so they came up with gambling?
No. Remember when we were Utes, when we were younger than, we were younger than Matty was when we met him. The lottery came out. It was going to be the absolute salvation. Nobody was going to have to burp anymore, nothing like that.
So the lottery was going to save education.
Among many other things.
It was all going to be for education.
Among many other things.
And in fact, they did initially divert all the funds for education and then took all the other education funds and diverted them elsewhere.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's the two-step. And then after that, it was off-track betting, right? That was going to be the savior.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that was the casinos. And now it's sports gambling.
All right.
So that's four. Do you feel saved four times? I don't.
If you ever watched my gambling record, you wouldn't think I'd feel saved once.
I still am absolutely... I'll go over this again, because I actually went through the numbers again. Because we got all kinds of other stuff to talk about today. Front-running by our politicians, my favorite topic.
We got to talk about Orwell, too.
Yes. Orwell. What were we talking about?
I'm serious.
Yeah, I know. Well, Manny, we were talking about, this is the day everybody accused me of being a Trumpy. Because I was defending his, not defending, I was, defending would be a horrible word. I was pointing out some kind of forgotten facts, I won't say little known, forgotten facts regarding the casinos in New Jersey. And how, when those places went up, they had all this flow from people. The idea being that they were going to take Atlantic City and turning it into a real town, you know, like Las Vegas or something. And they never really did. I mean, the time I was there, I walked out the back door to the casino. I'm like, where the hell am I? They never developed, you know, the good steak joints across the street or anything like that, like you have in Vegas. And but they had the most, for those who were never there in those days, Kevin, the amount of buses that parked. Actually, if the casino employees were asked to park, what's the parkway to Jersey Parkway, wherever it goes to Atlantic City?
No, the Garden State.
Freeway, wherever it is?
Or is it Garden State Thruway or Garden State Parkway? Parkway, I think.
And well, Manny, the lanes, the two lanes would, like, separate for an area. And in the middle, there would be, you know, 5,000 cars or 4,000 cars. And all the buses, I mean, all the people who worked at the casinos were, because there weren't enough parking in Atlantic City. The employees were supposed to park there. Then there were buses that took you to your casino, which, you know, made some sense. So you had all that. And then you saw another area where there was just a sea of buses that were parked from every little town, you know, within 200 miles with every blue-haired lady that was going there during the day to gamble. I mean, it was just really something. And then all of a sudden, they opened up these places in Connecticut. And I was reading through some of the details. They had none of the tax burden, or not none, but very little of the tax burden that people had in Atlantic City. And all of a sudden, how quick was it, Kevin, in basically a month or two, everybody from like New York and those areas north that used to go to Atlantic City all of a sudden turned around and went to Connecticut. And for a while, the one casino was the biggest one in the world, wasn't it?
Well, Heek and Son, and they have, you know, they have an arena there. They host basketball tournaments and concerts and
But I had no idea that the state of Connecticut, how you do this, I can't even. You know, I would be so wealthy. I don't know where I'd live. I'd live on Monaco, chasing Princess Grace's Grace Kelly's like granddaughters or something. If you could just think outside the box and just totally lower yourself on your ability to deal with human nature instead of trying to be fair, the rewards seem to be so much more dramatic. At least the monetary rewards. I don't know the rest of the rewards, but. The state of Connecticut cut a deal with these two casinos that they would not allow anybody else in the state, like maybe ever, to have slot machines if they got 25% of the gross of the slot machine. Now, Matty, you've been to Vegas, and I don't know if they still have any more because they don't have as many, shall we say, everyman casinos like the Stardust and those kinds of places, but they used to have carousels that promised 95 or 99% returns on slots. I mean, you could actually, like, win slots in Vegas. I mean, not if you stood there all week, obviously, but short periods of time, you could actually win. I never did, but other people did. I was reading that the total handle in the slots in 2017 was like $13.1 billion. And you know what the winnings were? 1.1. I mean, what did Mr. T say? I pity the fool. I mean, how could you possibly give 25% of the gross of a slot machine to the state and still make money while you're making any kind of a reasonable gambling event? I mean, obviously the lottery pays what, 40%, 42? Well, that's just a bleep hole, right? See, you should know that. At least if you go to the racetrack, they pay back 85%. So I mean, at least I'm just going to say it's a great game, but it's over twice as fair as the lottery. I mean, craps returns if you stay in the pass line, what, 0.495% or something? I mean, blackjack, if you know how to play
it. Taking your word for it, Tom. I'm not a gambler.
Well,
so.
Blackjack, if you know what you're doing and just use the basic strategy, you're at like 49% or 48. So, I mean, there's ways to do this, for God's sake. Roulette is what? Roulette's, how many roulette things are there, Manny? There's 36 plus the 2-0 and double zero, right? And they pay 35-1.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So there's 38 spots and you pay 35-1. That's pretty close, right? There's 38 spots and they pay 35-1. I'm just saying. Now, how does that contrast to $13 billion in the door and one out? And these are people who are supposed to go to whatever. Anyway, yesterday, the market is down pretty heavy during the show, and it goes down heavier.
Yeah, speaking of gambling.
Speaking of gambling. Of course, I'm sitting there listening because we got big positions from some people and are pretty live. And I'm like, you know, we got to get a little bit longer here, but I don't know. Is this, do we really want to get, you know, get long, or we just want to cover our shorts, say thank you very much, it's a single, and, you know, we'll take what we can get. So, of course, we do that, right? And we don't get long. And all of a sudden, you see, you know, Trump or somebody, Trump trots out, he'll throw another, what, $100 billion into the mix. So there, he's up $100 billion or something. So we start creeping back from that. And then Mnuchin comes out and says, one part of the deal that we don't know anything about, one part of the negotiations they're obviously having an issue with, he's okay, he'll accept the Democrats' plan and something in there. I don't know what the hell he's talking about because it hasn't been published. So now we're creeping. And now that we're creeping, we're building up momentum. So now this is two hits from our elected and appointed officials that have turned things. And all of a sudden we get to like 235, 240. And it looks like we're going to finish up on the day in all three of the indices. And all of a sudden McConnell comes out and goes, I don't like any of these deals. I'm not voting for any of this crap. So then we turn around and head south again, but not very much because we only had a few minutes left. So there's three reactions to the market, the three idiots during the day. And I tell you what, Kevin, if we don't think that somebody's trading this stuff, if they aren't, they're so dumb they're not being in politics. I would say that if you and I were in a position like that and we said something, we're probably not going to front run it. But boy, oh boy, any of our entourage, they knew what we were going to say. The only thing I'll say about Trump, again, before I get a million tweets, is he's so half-assed with these tweets and stuff that I'm not even sure the people around him know what he's doing. And so maybe some of the stuff that he says isn't being front run. But I'll tell you what, his son-in-law and the gang around him, if ever anybody knows how to make money, it's that group. I mean, I don't think they'd ever let a good change in policy in the middle of the day when we're way up or way down go to waste. I mean, the opportunity is just right there. I mean, how do you
opportunity is there. You would think somebody would be monitoring their trades, though, wouldn't you, Tom?
You think the SEC is going to...
No, I would think, you know, media. They watch every.
How would a media know what
they do?
How would a media?
I don't know. I'd be surprised if you didn't have somebody who was sitting there, just sitting on, you know, trades, looking for what's going on with them.
But how would you?
And you know, Frank sent something out. Was it yesterday? You know, that about somebody. I didn't have a chance to read it all the way through, but it had to do with some trades ahead of COVID-19. So this stuff does get reported. That's what I'm saying. I would think that if they were as closely as media watches Trump,
you would never be able to
Trump administration wouldn't they be all over this?
There would one thing that you'll never get out of PTI. Is Kevin O'Neill's trading records.
Okay, and that's a privacy thing.
But Kevin's right, though, in some sense, because I remember a couple of months ago, a bunch of different politicians, their trading records were reflected when they sold a bunch of stock before an announcement. That's not the same thing you're talking about, but it's the same idea, and they were able to report on that.
And I'm not telling you they're clean. I wouldn't know, but I would think, you know, just, you know, it's the same as the tax returns. One thing you would never get out of the IRS or an accounting firm is Trump's tax returns, and yet there they were.
You bring up a real good question, Kevin. The issue that Frank sent around, for those listeners should probably know the whole story, is the thing that's been percolating lately, the last few days, has been, was there any deception regarding the COVID? And the guy who has been front and center on this has been Larry Kudlow, how he even had that job, I have no idea. We're talking about 2008, the Goldilocks economy, the greatest story never told. He was George Bush's guy, and now the world was great, and 3 weeks later we were in some massive thing with debt up to our eyeballs. And he's supposed to be a national economist. Anyway, the story is that he and somebody else, after coming on essentially national TV and saying this COVID thing was overplayed and blah, 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 they had it under control. And I don't think he ever really said, you know, it's not a problem, but let's say he minimized it. The accusation is that in the next couple of nights, he had a meeting with essentially Republican insiders and said it's a lot worse than he gave other people the impression was on national TV. Now, I wouldn't put it past him in a second to do that, to be honest with you. Now, the idea is now that these people took that information, and while everybody else is, you know, sitting there with their 401ks not doing anything, these guys essentially said, well, this isn't good for the market, and they started selling. Because their information from essentially people in the know, I mean, the National Economic Advisor, was appreciably different than what they gave us. It's sort of the same thought that a chairman of American Airlines comes on and says, you know, business is coming back, although we're still losing money, it's getting better, blah, blah, blah. And that night, you're having a meeting with, you know, 15 insiders from some place and saying this place is going down the drain. I mean, it's the same theory to that. Now, whether you can hold a public official to that same sort of scrutiny as somebody who's a chairman of a place, I'm going to say the law will say no. Now, whether you should or shouldn't, morally it's the same thing, but we found out more than the years we've been doing this show that the morality of things don't necessarily match up with the legality of things, do they, Kevin? Now,
definitely not the same thing in a lot of minds.
And so that's where that is. But now when you're talking about things that are obviously, I mean, I go back to, this is not new. Back when the Federal Reserve was the game changer, and you would have, you know, somebody going over and making a, who's the one bleep that went over and gave the speech in, was it Shanghai in the middle of the night where the spoos were down 40 and he turned them around 50 or something? That's back when 40 and 50 was a big number. I mean, what you would have to do, Kevin, is you would have to absolutely sit there and look at the trade in the S&Ps. And if not one buy order untoward came in until he actually gave the speech, you don't have a problem, in my mind. But if you found out that in the 5, 10, 20 minutes, half hour before, that all of a sudden stuff started to move, then you got to call the bleep and say, who the hell knew about your speech? But they're not going to do that. The SEC is not going to go after somebody of that level unless it's so egregious. Now, which brings me to the next question you guys asked. How did people find out after the somehow or another, the congressional stuff, people must have to report the trades they make or something. I mean, I think it's probably more like House rules or Senate rules. I'm not sure on this. Lou would know better, maybe. You're right. People knew that week that I was going to say Bim, but I won't. The lady who's the richest lady in Congress, she got appointed to what's-his-name's spot. She's from, like, South Carolina or Georgia or someplace. And her husband's the head of the NASDAQ. And she sold ahead of the COVID stuff, and she was on that committee.
Oh, I know who you're talking about, and I can't remember.
I mean, that to me is unconscionable. Now, but you're asking me, how is it that we found out about that, the press did, but the press is never going to find out about Jared Kushner's, you know, accountant in London trading spooks. And we're never going to find out about who traded the head of the Fed guy's China speech. I mean, that's somehow we can't get. But we do seem to be able to get the stuff from Congress. Now, whether the Congress rules require them to report the stuff or not, I don't know. I would love to have somebody on. The questions you guys just went through, I gave you my best answers, but I know they're not the best. Now, what the difference is between somebody who's appointed, somebody who's working in the White House, somebody who actually is a congressman, the reporting requirements different on trades. Actually, I'd love to know all that specifically. And as to who gets a Fed speech beforehand and who they tell. I mean, if I could get a guest that would read me off all the different spots and the rules for every one of these areas, I would love it. But who's that person? I mean, there may be somebody.
I'm just trying to think if you know who that person would be, and I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
I go back to it. I mentioned it the other day, and I don't like to repeat. But
where's Kathy Durbin when we need her?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the other day that I actually listened to George Shultz. This is so long ago that I can't believe I remember it because it was so outrageous what he said when he became the Secretary of the Treasury. Whoever was doing the interview, whoever was doing Face the Nation back then, said, "Mr. Secretary, when an announcement comes out like the labor or whatever." Clearly, there's a few people that need to know these numbers before everybody else, like the president, you know, and him surprised walking out the helicopter. What do you think of the labor numbers? And him going, what labor numbers? And Shultz goes, funny you should mention it. He was an honest guy. When they gave me the list of people that got this information before the public, I was astounded at all these names on the list. The first thing I said is, how do these idiots get on there? He goes, I tried to get him off. He said, after 2 weeks, it was the hardest thing I ever did in politics, and I gave up. And here's a guy who was Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of State, and he said he couldn't get these people off this list. Now, my question is, now that was a long time ago. Is there still such a list? If so, who's on it? The tweet thing with, I think, to be honest with you, not just kidding, I mean, I think Trump does half of that when he's in the can. You know, I mean, I don't expect.
Yeah, I don't think that's in any way controlled. He's, I think in his case, when it comes into his head, it comes, I would say out of his mouth, but in his case, it comes, out of his smartphone.
But I mean, but Mnuchin, without casting any aspersions, the guy's from Goldman Sachs. Everybody at Goldman Sachs was way more than this chief guy of the value of inside information. It's part of the creed. And why do you, I mean, the same month that all this crap's happening, or the same quarter, those guys double their expectations on income. Do we not think this is somehow all connected? I mean, are we that stupid? I don't know. I don't know where the connections are.
They're just savants. That's
I don't know where the connections are. I couldn't point my fingers, but for God's sake, I mean, are we really that stupid collectively? Just saying.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, that wasn't rhetorical. You were asking, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, so the trick is, I think the trick is, in the immortal words of George Stigler, and I'm not the guy who said this first off, the trick is, like in corruption for contracts for Dan Ryan or for bridges and stuff, the trick is to have the bidding legitimate. Because if the price is legitimate, there's no money left over for corruption. And I think...
I get that. I think that makes a lot of sense. When you have to go for the low bids, then the only way to recover it is under the table.
Well...
Much like conversations we've had about college sports. You know, when you suppress the market, it'll find a way.
Sure, it absolutely does. No, but I'm saying when you go to the low bid should be the correct bid, right?
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you're talking about, I'm not enough of a, let's put it this way, I used to love sitting in for hours listening to engineers, so I probably know, on a scale of 1 to 10, if everybody's a 0, I'm probably a 1, all right? I'm not a 2 or a 5 or an 8 for sure. But when you do a bridge and you have assumptions about bedrock and so forth, even though everybody's supposed to do their own testing, it is possible that when you start to sink some caissons that you run into a spot that's really a problem. And that in order to get in that spot, that it's, 40% higher for that particular caisson than anybody expected. Now, that type of a change order, as we used to call them at Pullman, I can understand the people putting the bridge up, meaning us, I could see them paying up a little more if it's something nobody could have spotted, right? But if, and by and large, the people going out for bid, meaning you and I, the public and the listeners, we should have somebody on our team, Matty Weber or Thomas or somebody, and I'm going to say, how much should this bridge cost? Here it is. Here's the design. Well, our guys, whether we have to pay some guys or whether we got guys, our guys should know pretty much exactly. I mean, if you go do the Dan Ryan, guess what? We're going to need, 2 million cubic feet of concrete. That's $9 a cubic foot. Well, there's 18 million right there. We need this much rebar. There's, the big items are fairly obvious to just about everybody. So.
Yeah, it's no different than, assessing any other project. Once you've done it enough.
Yeah.
You should be pretty good at it.
So. When you, is my buddy Bob Long from Pullman, probably long gone, he did these projects all over the world. He said, you got two issues. One is, if everybody comes in way too high, they all colluded, now you got a problem. Because that problem, maybe you can go wrap back out for bid, or you can threaten to throw people in jail or do something. But eventually, you'll get, if you do it, if you have the political power, you just have to take one of the crummy bids. He goes, if you're in South America, you're probably just going to take one of the high bids, and that's the way you live. Because you're not going to squeeze the corruption out of it, and there you might just be happy with 40% over what it ought to be, right? Instead of 50 or 60. But at least you know what you're dealing with. He said, actually the bigger problem is if somebody comes in lower than you know it costs. He goes, then somewhere along the line, the guy's going to figure it out and he's going to screw you on something. The concrete's going to be twice as much water in it that you want or something. And you never know where he's going to come and get you. So you really do have to go back to the guy and say, hey, you forgot something, you doofus. And get the thing up to where it ought to be. You don't care if he makes no money, but if he starts losing, he says, you're going to find out that you're supposed to have 20 beams and you only got 18. You know, that type of thing. He says,
well, if it's legitimately underbid, then you also have to worry that you have somebody who's incompetent and they're just going to go belly up in the middle of the project.
Right. Or,
so, you know, so that would be the most benign, ethically speaking, that would be the most benign circumstance, and that isn't good either.
I do have one exception, though, is when the Dan Ryan, I was still on the trading floor a long time ago, the bridge, as you leave downtown, you basically got the bridge all the way to, what, 31st Street? You're up in the air?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was redone, but it was two separate contracts, one side and then the other. Well, the incentives to finish early were so dramatic that Walsh Construction, I think, got the first half. And they were so convinced they were going to get the second half, they left all their equipment there. Well, Buzzy Passion Construction, looks at it and says, I can go a lot faster than those guys. So he essentially underbids the thing to where they're like, you can't even make any money here. And he's like, watch me. He had more people on the job. They did a terrific job. It's lasted as long as the other side. In fact, it looks better to me. They just finished like 6 weeks early. Got such an amazing bonus from the state for finishing early. He covered the little bit that he never got, plus some massive profit on top of it because of the bonus clause for finishing early. So there's ways to get around it, but SP Futures now up 750, NASDAQ Futures up 40. Looks like we're going to finish the week up, at least as of now. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He is Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 950. NASDAQ futures up 59 now. We're putting the whip to it a little bit. Dow futures up 61. We'll see if this continues. Somebody must be... Well, we had a couple up days, then we had a few down days. Well, actually, Monday was a big up day, and we had down day. I think probably we're still up on the week, or we got to be pretty close. Looks like we might be going to finish up on the week. Nikkei down 96.4%. That's 2 days in a row. Shanghai up 4, call that flat. Hang Seng up 228.9%. Over in Europe, these guys were down heavy yesterday, and they're back a little bit today. DAX was down over 2% yesterday. They're up 0.87% today. It's 110 points. FTSE up 74, 1.3%. CAC around up 72, 1.5%. If you're getting the feeling like I am, we are seeing somewhat of a high volatility area, but we're high volatility within a range. We can't seem to break out of the range we're in. It's not like we're going to go flying down or flying up here. We're kind of locked in. I don't know when that breaks, but at some point we'll break out of it. Yesterday, the Dow was down 19. Like I said, not very much. S&P futures down 5. The Dow at one point was down more than, was like 350. So to come back, we closed only 19 is one hell of a comeback. NASDAQ, however, was still down 54.5%, but now we've erased almost that exact number this morning in the futures. Bonds, 0.73%. So again, 10-year yield steady at a lousy number. Bund now is minus 0.62. Japan a positive 0.02. Oil down 36 cents, but still over 40, 60. Brent down 43 cents, 42.73. Nat gas, 2.78, pretty much unchanged. RBOB down 2 cents to 1.16. And we've got gold up 5 bucks, 19.13. Silver up 28 cents, 24.51. Copper down a penny at 3.06. Stimulus hopes are fading. You see, fading. So, Maddie, we're going to fade over to you for some traffic weather sports.
I can do that. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of significant issues already this morning. A big one happened earlier this morning. A fiery, fatal crash on the inbound Eisenhower. Rollover, fire, and obviously injuries and a fatality, unfortunately, happened earlier this morning that has the Eisenhower still closed between Harlem and US 12 on the inbound side, with crews working to get that cleared up. Traffic is forced off at First Avenue. Again, it was a fatal crash. They're also saying an 8-year-old was injured in the crash and taken to Loyola Medical Center, too. So hopefully that child is okay. But significant issues on the inbound Ike beginning at Harlem. So you want to avoid 290 if at all possible. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson, there's some road work out in Bolingbrook on the inbound side. It looks like that has the... right before Naperville Road, that has the two right lanes blocked, so heavy congestion on the inbound Stevenson out in the southwestern suburbs out in Bolingbrook, beginning at Naperville Road. So you'll want to keep that in mind if you're heading inbound on I-55. Those two lanes are blocked. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive looks good in both directions. Off the expressways, nothing to report. Weather today, it's cold this morning, and then it'll warm up to similar highs of yesterday. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 55. Right now, it is clear and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 100 today. Right now, it's clear and 69. In sports, baseball was the game of choice last night, and it was a good one between the Astros and the Rays. Astros jumped out to an early 2-0 lead. Rays scratched and clawed their way back, ended up tying it 3-3 in the 7th, and then it was 3-3 in the 9th when Carlos Correa hit a walk-off solo home run to keep the Astros alive. They now trail that series 3-2 heading into Game 6 tonight. The Braves are on the brink of eliminating the Dodgers as they blew out Clayton Kershaw and Los Angeles 10-2 last night. The Braves now lead that series 3-1 and will have an opportunity to close out the heavily favored Dodgers tonight.
Gee, maybe Kershaw's got the commercial hex. What do you think, sir? What do you think, Kevin?
He seems to get hurt every postseason, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, he's been around a while.
His postseason track record isn't good either, but you know, everything in the postseason is small sample. What you do all season long, you know, basically your card counting, and what you do all season long and doesn't necessarily apply to the postseason, because when you're doing, you know, you're playing averages, you're playing percentages, and you do that. It's going to work out most of the time, but not every time. But when you're playing 162 games or even 60 games, it's going to fall your way more often than not. But if you only have five games, it only has to not fall your way once to screw you.
Well, you also are we thinking, like I'm thinking, of course, everybody knows I'm a little more of a conspiracy theorist than most, but are we thinking the balls are juiced again this year?
For the postseason?
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty obvious they were a couple years ago.
I don't see any. You know, there have been a lot of tight ball games, a lot of low scoring.
If anything,
every once in a while somebody erupts. But
yeah, if anything, I thought the offense sucked this year in the 60-game season for the most part. So I would say they're not juiced at all this year.
Well, I'm talking about the postseason. I mean, when I start seeing every home runs, you know, 440 and stuff, I just kind of wonder.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, just saying, you know.
So. Hey, Tom, you read 1984 somewhere back in
long time ago.
Lifetime, didn't
yes.
you?
Yeah, and I keep threatening with people that would want to work at home that they're missing the part in the book that's probably coming, that at any given second somebody can turn the camera on you. And if you're sitting there petting the dog and not looking at you.
A lot of intrusions actually do work that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, but stop going to your Zoom meetings in underwear.
Yeah.
Matt, did you read it?
I did read it. Yeah, I did. It's
okay,
been a
so
while.
You remember?
Yep,
and for
absolutely.
Anybody who doesn't know, it's it was written in the I think the late 40s about a dystopian future where you had a totalitarian government that could monitor everything you did and thought and would manage control. And there were a couple of There were some concepts in there. The term doublethink was is the ability to believe in two conflicting facts at the same time. So things like war is peace and ignorance is strength. And the language used to deceive was called doublespeak, would misrepresent the truth. Newspeak was the language marked by euphemism and basically the inversion of customary meetings. There was a concept called crime stop, the faculty of stopping short at a threshold of any dangerous thought, deliberately eroding the public skepticism. And, of course, there's reality control, which is the slow erasure of history and its replacement by government-approved stories.
Well, we're doing that.
Yeah. So just this week, did you see the exchange with Judge Barrett and Mazie Hirono about sexual preference?
It's not... For some reason, CNBC hasn't even had snippets of that, so it's not been any of the
business
stations.
Barrett used the term sexual preference in one of her responses, and Senator Hirono immediately stopped her and said, that's offensive. Preference indicates that it's a choice, and it's not. It's people are born the way they are. So that would be sort of your newspeak answer. It turns out later that day, Merriam-Webster went and changed the meaning of the word in their dictionary.
Unreal.
To reflect that. And, you know, it used to be that what we didn't report was manipulation of the news. Now it's outright suppression. You saw that with Twitter and Facebook. Your reality control. And even last night with Stephanopoulos not even bothering to ask Biden a question about the news of the week. Social media buried the story, and then the Biden campaign, this is great doublethink, the Biden campaign used the social media censorship to dismiss the story as if that debunked it. And actually, I do think the suppression by Facebook and Twitter actually drew more attention to the story than there would have been, but that's another issue.
Yeah, I don't think they gained by that.
then there's the forced to apologize. Politico's Jake Sherman was forced to apologize. This is all this week.
Yep.
Was forced to apologize for asking the Biden campaign about the Hunter Biden email. He actually had to publicly apologize for that. And I sent you the thing about the Notre Dame St. Mary's Observer, their student newspaper. They had to issue an apology because they put Paul Ryan's on the front page, on the top of the front page, and his appearance on campus, and Angela Davis's underneath the Paul Ryan story. So they had to apologize for that.
Angela Davis is still alive,
and also Judge Barrett's sorority, the Kappa Delta sorority from her undergraduate days. While we do not take a stand on political appointments, we recognize Judge Coney Barrett's significant accomplishment. We acknowledge our members have a variety of views and a right to their own beliefs. Well, they had to delete that and apologize for it.
And one more.
Vermont Representative Peter Welch suggested that we create a new agency with legislative authority to control what goes on social media rather than delegate those decisions to tech giants. So we're going to have a ministry of truth in his world.
Well, as you know, first of all, what you said is all true, so there's no argument. It's astounding.
That's in a week.
It's astounding.
What a crazy week.
But you have, in terms of where we are, when you go back to when the Constitution was written, when you essentially had a town square and you might have a newspaper or two, I think a monopoly of any size, Kevin, is going to tear the truth asunder no matter where it is. Now, when you get to a media, or wherever these people are, but the difference in 1984 when I read it, and you know, I obviously read excerpts of it now because it's still pretty cogent. The thing that I find wrong about it, and the thing that I can't put my arms around, and this I gathered from my buddy Bill Murphy, my attorney friend. The difference in 1984 is the theme was the government, whoever they were, was doing it to people. Now the theme is totally different. People are doing it to themselves. And the subtle difference there to me is dramatic. And I don't know what to do with that piece of information, but
I agree with you, Tom. I think that's a good point. Although the government and media nexus can be pretty tight sometimes.
I don't disagree. I guess I don't know. Obviously, the fix in 1984 was to overthrow the bleeps, but now we're the bleeps.
But they didn't get overthrown in 1984.
Well, you don't know. There might have been a sequel.
They broke Winston Smith instead.
But I mean, but the solution was you got to get these idiots out of there. But now we're the idiots collectively. Many understand what I'm talking about. I mean, it's a big difference.
Government is, let's put it this way: the old adage, "You get the government you deserve." That's exactly what we're doing. We are not taking control of our lives, and you know it shows up in all manner of privacy issues as a result. Things like Stingray cell phone interceptor systems that will cell phone repeaters. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, we've got a lot of local law enforcement now using those. So all you have to be is anywhere near their stuff, your cell phone signal is going to get intercepted. They will relay your calls and your texts onto the cell tower, but not until they've extracted everything off of your phone.
Kevin, I have a question. And I want to ask
we do have some government doing it, too.
I have a question for you regarding that because you're a systems analyst. But I also want to go into this. Somebody sent me this. Congressional Research Service, some laws or some white paper stuff about Amazon taxation. It was written in 2015, and I was reading the thing, and it's absolutely fascinating. But my question to you is, we have all this, quote, technology on the part of, well, simple stuff. The tollway has gathering information on my Easy Pass in my truck, even if I'm off the tollway. If I'm on Milwaukee, under the incredible guise of somehow I was on the tollway and the tollway is a backup, so they want to know where I went to get around the tollway and blah, blah, blah. Some total BS. And we also have the thing you're talking about. We have more cameras in Chicago. I mean, than any city. Well, London's a few more that have more. I was excoriated by a couple of the listeners that Chicago didn't have more than any other city in the world but London, but they clearly are the most than any city in the U.S. Kevin?
I wouldn't even want to be in the top five and brag about it.
No, but what I'm saying is we have more crime now than we ever have. We put these things on the expressway. I believe a few years ago somebody got this huge contract. I mean, I don't remember the details. We have more shootings on the expressway now than we ever have. We've been many reports, 2-3 of them a week, for God's sake, or something like that. And nobody, but they don't work, or nobody looks at them. What's the point? I mean, I remember we read Patriot Games. That was the guy who wrote all those books. Hunt for Red October, that was his name.
Clancy. I've seen the movie. I haven't read that book.
Well, the point is when the guys were coming at the family, and one of the most interesting parts, that's why I think you have to read rather than just watch the movie, although the movie was good. The whole point was they have all these satellites going all over the place, taking pictures. And this is, 30 years ago. So God knows how many we got now. And they were looking for them. What these people would do is they'd go to Africa and they'd have these camps, training camps down there. The Irish Republican Army had a camp. And, I mean, everybody had their camp, right? So these guys are IRA guys. Anyway, the story was that this is an American guy who works for the CIA. The Irish Republican Army tries to knock off, was it the prince or the nephew of the prince in Britain? And somehow or another, this guy sees it coming down and he sees a guy about to shoot the prince and he tackles the guy and wrecks his shoulder. And in the meantime, somebody gets shot and it's the brother of one of the nasty IRA guys. So this guy thinks it's personal and wants to come after the American guy. So the American guy knows it's personal and he's in the government and he goes to the government and he says, look, you got all these satellites. I think these guys, from my research, they're probably hiding out down in North Africa. And the guy says, well, we can read somehow or another. I don't know where they get the gasoline or whether it's gasoline, or whether they do it electronically. They can retarget these satellites. They can sort of shift orbit.
Yeah, reposition it.
But now where you get the fuel to do that, 3 times a week, I have no idea. I'm not a satellite physicist. But anyway, but then they come down to, the guy's name was, how was his name? Who's the dude in the book?
Jack Ryan.
He goes, Jack, we'll reposition it. He said, but we get 1.5 million photos a day. We got 3 people looking at them. So if you want to reposition, you're going to have to come in after work and be 5 hours a night going over, 50,000 photos a night to try and find the camp. So he's in there by himself with a magnifying glass going over these photos. So, I mean, we've got all this bleep. I mean, is anybody looking at the stuff on the Congress? Is anybody looking at the stuff you're talking about? Does anybody care, really, if I'm on Milwaukee Avenue, unless it's a divorce thing and I'm heading off to my girlfriend's place? I mean, what are we doing with all this information?
Obviously, yeah, where it's going to go, though, Tom, is the artificial intelligence is emerging to be able to do that analysis instead of humans.
But somebody still has to tell what to look for, and not to me.
But understood, but it's going, part of artificial intelligence is that it has the ability to learn itself. I'll send you a couple of good videos about it because, I think you'll find it interesting. But the thing is that creates, that just exacerbates the privacy issues.
Well, I'm trying
that, that doesn't make it better, that makes it worse.
But what we have, and seemingly getting worse in my mind, or maybe I'm just learning more about it. Or maybe I'm just the son of an Irish cop. What can I tell you?
You're a son of something.
Son of something, yeah.
I'm not sure that was the word they gave.
Yeah, son of something. But when you look at what we talked about the front running earlier, and what I consider to be, and whether anybody's looking at it, the people who, let's say the executive branch is charged with enforcing the law, correct? Congress makes the law, the judges interpret the law, and an executive branch enforces the law. Am I right on that? I mean, it's been a while, but
I believe you're right.
But the executive branch, because we now have 90 bazillion laws, is pretty much able to focus on the ones they want. Now, obviously, you would hope you would still track down a murderer in the street because people are going to be pissed off about that. Well, Chicago, they don't get used to it, but by and large, but now you ask, is Trump really going to be outraged if the son-in-law made money on a spoof trade to where he calls Barr and says, or the SEC chairman and said, if I were you, I'd put tape lines in the White House. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, you're not going to get the alderman in Chicago talking about kickbacks and having money going to aldermen in California instead of here, and they repatriate the money here. And the guy in California has donations going to the guy in Chicago, and he kicks the money out there to avoid election laws. I mean, they're not going to say call up the state's attorney and say enforce this. It's not going to happen. But the one that always fascinates me, and it fascinates me because I see the stock is now trading $3,300 up another $20, $33.58. This Amazon situation and how much they have been able, and please don't give me the crap of how good they are at everything. I mean, I hear that from my girlfriend. I don't need to hear much more of it. They have done very well in a lot of areas because they've had a lot of money to spend. Now, my question is, why exactly? I mean, I live in Chicago. If you've got a parking ticket, or if they think for a second you didn't pay your PTI use tax license to the city, you better not spend too long in the can or you're going to have company. They'll be on you like there's no tomorrow. You have a parking ticket. They put a boot on your friggin' car, for God's sake, for like three parking tickets. And yet, we just can't seem, and even with COVID and even with the state broke, we just can't seem to go after the people who are not paying taxes on Amazon. Because, you know, why? Because they're the same people. Jay Pritzker's wife is probably number two on the list, or somebody in the family. He's just not going to go there. I mean, when this whole concept of democracy breaks down, when the people that are enforcing the laws are the ones breaking them, or for some reason can't go after people because, I mean, why can't we go after the person who did the spoo trade before the person in China made the speech? Because we're liable to find out he's one of us, or she, and we don't want to go there. We are absolutely breaking down more. I mean, I'm not saying this wasn't always like that, Kevin.
No, but isn't that the issue that at least some people have been signaling for years now, that there is no equal application of the law?
No, probably never has been. But on this kind of scale, you never had a company that is essentially taking over the retail space because we refuse to tell people they're supposed to pay taxes on it. Anybody tells me how these guys are geniuses? Yeah. They went to Kevin's class. They know how to do supply chain management. The reason why they did is because people use them because they don't have to pay taxes. You can talk to your blue in the face about that, but there's very few things I say I know I'm right, and this is one I know I'm right. If they would have had to pay taxes the whole way through, they would not be anywhere near this size, Kevin. Not anywhere near.
They wouldn't have the same investment, and you're right. A lot of people wouldn't have shopped there because there were people who were motivated to shop online because they didn't have to pay taxes. And that's been true of other companies.
Well, listen, listen.
You know, for instance, you could buy appliances from ABT, but and not have to pay taxes either if you were out of state. Nevertheless, Amazon benefited from it more than anybody else.
One of the people that I would say, out of all the people I know, the one that is one of the most, Lou probably is the worst or best, is careful about everything he says. What did you just say twice? That is absolutely wrong.
Oh, I never say anything wrong, so you better tell me.
You just did. You said people were aware that they didn't have to pay taxes. Is that a true statement?
People were aware. Yes, it's a true statement.
No, it isn't.
People were aware. They did have to pay taxes. They were. Let me rephrase.
Yes.
They were aware that taxes weren't collected.
Yes.
And nobody was reporting it.
That's correct. But they also should be aware that they owe that money.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say,
and in many cases, I think that's true. I think there were people that were aware that they owe that money, and the attitude was always, "Yeah, well, come get me."
Well, but I'm saying here we are in a situation. I'm just contrasting that. Now, does Jay Pritzker or Lori or whoever? They must think they're never going to have a parking ticket, so their car's never going to get friggin' booted. But by the way,
or theirs are going to be fixed. They're going to get the ticket and they're going to hand it over.
But they're very aware that they want
to take care of this.
But they're very aware that they want to cheat their own city and get stuff at Amazon and not pay the taxes. So you can't have, what did your mother used to say? You can't have the fox in the hen house. And we do. We have crooks in the hen house. But I'm going to say that 99% of the people, the population, would say it just the way you did. I don't have to pay taxes. Yet all you got to do is is Google, they're another monopolist, is Google Illinois state taxes on stuff you buy. In fact,
yeah, stop plugging Google.
Yeah, and in fact, if you're over $500, you're supposed to report quarterly, Kevin. That's one fancy TV. It's Form ES something something. And yet, so I mean, but now we've let a company essentially take over the world based on people not paying taxes when other people do. I mean, how do we do that? And we've got a government that seems to be making an awful lot of money personally. I mean, how do all these people go to the Senate, is I'm going to say regular people, and go to the House, regular people, and in 10 years now come out as multimillionaires? And you're telling me they're not doing anything wrong? How do you do that?
Well, now let's come back full circle on this, because we got into this talking about 1984 and privacy and some of those kinds of things. And to come back full circle on it now, where did Amazon take Jeff Bezos? Back into media, where he control messages now.
Looks exactly right. So, Kevin, we have a couple of...
So now we go back and say, okay, let's explore that nexus again.
Yeah.
There it is.
Kevin, we have a couple of guests coming on, and I think you'll be interested in hearing. Well, they're not here yet. They're supposed to be here by 7. James and Kendall, we're not sure we're using... James is here, right. We're not sure we're using the last names, because... And what I'm dying to find out, and these guys know, they have knowledge of, shall we say, the mortgage business in a way I don't. And I'm trying to figure out where the buck is stopping, and should we be buying big banks, little banks? Should we be shorting them? Who's going to end up the short end of the stick? And
who's going to end up holding the bag?
The bag, as they say in Chicago, holding the bag. Anyway, should be very interesting.
Yeah, I saw Matt's tweet about it. I'm looking forward to the segment.
Yep, S&P futures up 7.5. NASDAQ futures up 52. We're making somewhat of a comeback. We'll see if it holds, or are we going to wait for the next out peep, as he used to say, out of Washington, and we'll see how many times that changes the day. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures now up 6. Nasdaq Futures up 51. We kind of settled in there. We're kind of the spot we have. We had interesting. We had J.B. Hunt came out with earnings last night. Stocks down 10 bucks. I'm glad I didn't do that one. I was tempted at doing that one and figured I was going to stay steady. I would have been wrong. Transportation has been up pretty heavy lately, and all of a sudden there's one with earnings that kind of went the other way. We have an interesting guest this morning. The mortgage expert known only as Jim. Just, Jim, welcome to the show. Interesting, we had our girl AV, as I was starting to tell you on break, she ended up her finest hour, and she absolutely loved herself for it, but she did a great job. She got the guy who was the representative of the Uyghurs, how do you pronounce that, Manny? The Muslim people that are being enslaved in China, and, the guy comes on the air, and she was telling me about all the stuff I'm not supposed to ask him. Because, by the way, his dad's in a concentration camp, essentially. And I'm sitting there going, I never get nervous about the show. Because, the people that come in here are good, and everybody is all I have to do is open up their brain, and they spill it out, and it's what everybody wants to hear, right? So I'm sitting there going, all right, what am I going to do? I can't, if I ask the wrong stupid question to this guy, and he outpeeps, and all of a sudden his dad like gets knifed. I never feel like it's my fault. All he did was say like one word, and the guy talked for 15 minutes about everything that's wrong with it. I never had to say anything. He did it all. I'm saying, he can't blame me. All I did was say hello. The guy just... Anyway, Jim, we have you on, because I know you guys have done in the past and even are doing a lot of mortgage, work and workouts and not-so-workouts and kick-it-outs and all the other stuff in your long career doing this. And I'm just trying to, on the show, we constantly are talking about all the stuff that's going down with this COVID and places that people that aren't paying rent. Some people have money, some people don't. And we have, the talking heads on CNBC and other places saying, oh, you got to buy these, money center banks. They're all cheap, blah, blah, blah. And then people are touting the mid-level banks. And I'm just trying to figure out, maybe we go through a few examples of where the blood's going to end up. And I honestly don't know. And I have a feeling that you know more than me. So, just in general, what do you see? Now, granted, you and I are jaundiced because we're in downtown Chicago. What do you see here with people not paying their rent in some of these areas? And some people are, the doors, there's four people have closed the doors around the corner to where we're sitting in the last 2 weeks. I mean, what's going on just in general?
Well, thanks for having me on. In general, I think what we're seeing is another blowback that we had in the first financial crisis a couple of years ago in 2007, 2008, and 2009. The problem is now it was the pandemic that's causing it. I think the money center banks are probably better suited because they have to do a stress test as opposed to the smaller banks and the regional banks. But what I'm seeing is a lot of people are asking for help. I mean, it's no secret out there. People are still on unemployment. People are now, as we found out in the airline industry, the furloughs are now, layoffs.
Right, they're permanent.
So you have people now out of jobs. They can't pay their mortgages. You're seeing rates at an all-time low, but at the same time, if you can't pay, it doesn't help you because you're not going to be able to refinance. So I don't know. I'm hoping that maybe in the future the government is going to have to back these again and we'll have to go to a HAMP or HARP program again. to help get these people rectified and out there. So it's tough to say. I mean, I did read an article that we will be at a 22-year high on delinquencies starting in February because a lot of the forbearances will start to expire. I think in my industry, the most confusing thing is that people don't understand the difference between a forbearance and a deferment.
What is the difference?
There is a big difference.
I mean, educate me. I have no idea.
Okay. A forbearance, I basically tell you, you don't have to pay for X amount of months. But then after that, let's say 6 months, after 6 months is due, guess what? You have a six-month mortgage bill due. Most people can't afford that. It is a short-term fix. It is assuming that you would get your job back or you will get a new job. A deferment is where they actually take what is past due and they put it to the back end of the loan. Then you run into the problem is, and I run into this every day, well, what's this deferred balance? I'm paying it off. I don't remember this because you probably took it out in 2008 and now we are 2020, 14 years down, 12 years down the road, and you forgot about it because it is an interest, it is non-interest bearing a deferred balance or a balloon payment. Those are the two options that are being touted out very quickly now. And again, I do relate this to the financial crash, that the banks are just kind of throwing stuff out there without any real plan, because in my industry, in regards to evictions and foreclosures, the states control that. So the states could say, hey, I'm not going to foreclose on anybody or evict anybody for the next 6 months.
Well, how do you stop when let's put it this way. Two things. One is, I have a significant other in real estate and one of my best friends, and he's been on the show a bunch of times. He does a lot of, Greg, he does some foreclosure type of things. And what do you call it when, you buy it back from the bank and sell it? But I don't know. There's all kinds of different words. But
deed in lieu is what you're talking about.
Well, that's not what I would have said. But yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. See, you've been way too. That's why I need you on here, because I don't know these terms. I don't know of a soul with all the programs that, and I'm not going to, I'll take a shot here, the Obama administration allegedly put in there. I don't know of a soul who got any help. I'm sure some people did because the money went someplace, and neither did Audrey. I mean, the people that she was moving out of places that were, the foreclosure, she was getting people out in the nick of time before the foreclosures. They never got any help.
Yeah, that is true. I would say with the Obama and going forward, it was about 50-50. 50% of the people actually got a program that helped them. The other 50% got into programs that they didn't understand. I do handle a lot of bankruptcy accounts. I could tell you bankruptcy is a method. All it does is put a stay on there. You have to keep up with your plan. Depending on it, most people get confused on a Chapter 7. It does not stop a financial institution from foreclosing. People forget there are two components to a mortgage. There's the personal note. That does get wiped out in a bankruptcy. But then there's the mortgage, because obviously the value of the property was used to secure the loan. That created a lien. The lien is not on a person. It's on the property.
Right.
People get confused because I get calls from people who went through Chapter 7 saying, well, I don't owe anything. Well, I can guarantee you don't get the house for free.
You don't owe it, but you don't have the house either.
You got it.
What about, from what I hear, and again, this is all anecdotal. I never dig into, Odd's business and her friends, because she, a bunch of her pals come over. I mean, they come over and they're mortgage people and so forth, and they're some of the brightest people I've ever met. And, they're all self-made ladies, and it's a great group. Tough group, boy. You gotta be a lean dog to break into that pack, Jim. I mean, I go watch a game, because I don't really understand half the stuff they're talking about, but they always talk about if you decide, you or Maddie or me, something goes bad, we're foolish enough to not, quote, talk to the bank. We just don't send the mortgage in for a couple months. And then we say, okay, I got the job back. Here's my 3 months mortgage. Are we okay? And usually the answer is no. By the way, we have you know, $5,000 in legal fees and all this other crap we're now going to lob at you. Well, can you give me any kind of a list of what lawyer actually spent, you know, 20 hours on this case? They won't give that to you. I mean, is there any way you can at least stop that crap from happening to where if you're 3 months late, you can actually just walk in with your, you know, your 3 months mortgage and say, okay, I'm caught up. Is that even remotely on the screen?
Yes. I mean, you can always ask the bank for a reinstatement is what you're looking for. That would include all fees.
I'm saying the fees, do they have to prove them to you or they just lob you a number? You owe me 20 grand. For what?
They have to present the fees. The real question is legal fees. But, you know, late charges.
That I get. Okay.
Overdraft charges.
That I get.
You know, interest charges. Those will all be outlined.
Right.
Legal fees is a gray area, I admit. I strongly suggest to people, if you are having trouble, talk to your bank. The faster you talk to them, the easier a workout can be reached than by sticking your head in the sand and waiting 3 months, 6 months, and then saying, hey, I need help.
Jim, what is one of the things I always, Audrey and I, sometimes love a discussion over this. The bank or the place that you're doing this refi out of, if you're doing something short sale is the term I was looking for. You're doing a short sale out of. They don't own that mortgage. I mean, the Fed owns, you know, $1 trillion worth. You know, some guy in Saudi Arabia might own a 5,000. I mean, how the hell if you say, I'll tell you what, I can't pay this stuff, but I'll give you whatever. Or the house is a short sale, and it's worth, you know, 165, and you say, oh, look, I'll give you 150 for it right now, because now it's nobody's taking care of it for 4 months. I mean, look at the grass, look at that. I mean, I'll just give you 150. Who the hell makes that call? I mean, they're not going to call Powell at the Fed and saying, here's mortgage 444-55, and by the way, will you take 15 grand less than that? I mean, the Fed doesn't have any. I mean, when they buy all this stuff, what do they do with it? I mean, they don't have the people to manage it. You know, now even so, these banks become nothing more than advisory managers. I mean, are they really going to call the prince in Saudi Arabia and say, "Can I knock $5,000 off the price of this thing? This guy wants to buy it cash." I mean, what does that whole mess look like?
Yeah, it is a mess, Tom. Basically, coming from the banking world, it used to be a committee. The committee meets, they look at it, and they decide. But you're right. The servicer has a lot of control over it because you're right. The Fed doesn't know. I mean, they're buying and selling millions of mortgages every day. So you're right. I don't know the difference between your mortgage to the guy down the street. I have no idea. So they do rely very much on the servicing side to give them some sort of indication. Again, I went from the banking world where it was a committee. And you have a bunch of people sit in a room and decide whether we should take the offer or not. And yes, you run through that. How much is it going to cost me to maintain the property? You know, because I'm going to be on now. The servicer or the bank, I'm going to be on the hook for the property taxes. I don't want a property tax auction to happen because then they can wipe out my lien. Then the question is...
Oh, you can do that at a property tax auction?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't know that. Okay.
A municipal or a government lien supersedes our lien. That is why that they desperately will negotiate with the IRS or a state or a municipality to get that out, because technically if I bought it on, you know, someone's back taxes, I wait the redemption period, I could foreclose and get a property. I might have paid $15,000, and I might get a $120,000 property in, I think in Illinois it's 3 years. Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure, but that's why banks go to it to pay those, because it can get really messy. And obviously the IRS, they don't want to be a landlord. They don't want the property. They have no idea what it's worth. They'll negotiate. But basically, they used to go out and have people do drive-bys to get an idea what the property is worth, and then just do the math on figuring out what my carrying costs is. And if it makes sense, the problem was it used to take 6 to 9 months, because you have a committee and they run through the numbers and they're thinking about it, and then we agreed to meet again, so on and so forth. I think that's sped up in the world now, because a lot of the industry now has people that want to buy and fix and flip. So they're figuring out what the fix and flip price is as opposed to carrying it.
What's I wasn't going to go there, but since you drove me down this road here, I won't say rat hole, road. What happens if in these areas, Audrey did some work in Park Forest. I don't know if you know,
yes.
I'm sure you know what that is, but mm-hmm. We're talking about a place that in my mind is politically, I don't know who the hell runs the place, but somehow or another, I think maybe because the Lincoln Mall closed, I don't know, Jim, but she was talking about she's selling houses for $55,000 and the tax is $6,500. Or 55 or 6 or something. I'm going, say what? I mean, some guy bought a three flat and he remodeled the hell out of it. And I'll tell you what, you and I have been happy living in any of those units. They were gorgeous. Place is worth 98 and his taxes were 10.5. I mean, how the hell does it, I mean, how do you foreclose a place like that and tell some guy, oh, by the way, the place is 56 grand. Nobody's cut the grass for a while. It doesn't look so hot, but you owe 20 grand on tab. I mean, How does that negotiation even start?
Well, that negotiation starts when they pull title, to be honest with you. They'll find out. They will also, they have the property identification number, so they'll find out about any back taxes.
But how does the state expect to get that kind of money out of somebody? By the way, you owe us 18 grand. On a 50,000 house, I think I'll go somewhere else. I mean, how many people actually write that? You have to give me the house to write the check. 18 for the state.
That's a good question. I don't know how the state, you know, then again, I'm not a tax expert. I still don't know how the state figures out property taxes. You know, in regards to it, they seem to figure out some way to increase it. So I have no idea, but it's a good point. You know, the state obviously thinks it's based on the previous value, and unfortunately, they don't keep up to date on it, and if they found out it dropped, you know, I'm not sure how the state would handle it.
One of my friends is in that business. He says they figure out how much money they need, and whatever they have to do to screw with to get up to that number, they do, whether it's a multiplier or a value or whatever. The idea that your budget in a place doubles, and you're gonna snivel about how you paid 180 for the place and it's appraised at 180. They don't care. They just double the multiplier. What's the difference? They're just going to get double out of you.
Sounds about right with the state.
Yeah. Hey, can I shift gears a little bit because we're in downtown Chicago, and I, you know, we've had a couple people on. Who was on the hook? I mean, you mentioned that you thought the money center banks were okay because of the what do you call it?
The stress test.
I mean, who is likely? I'm not asking you if you know. I certainly don't want the names. Who's likely to own the mortgage on 440? Who's likely to own the mortgage on the Board of Trade since they went out and sold it to somebody else instead of keeping it themselves? I'm sure there was no mortgage when they sold it, but I'm sure there is now, the guy who bought it or the people who bought it. Who is likely to own a mortgage, you know, 175, which is a square block? It's not going to be Harris. It might have been Continental, you know, 50 years ago, but it's not going to be one bank now, is it? I mean, is it?
No, generally not. Not on big commercial real estates, it'll be several banks.
And not any private capitals or anybody like that?
There could be. I mean, if you do have a hedge fund or a, you know, private capital, people could own it.
Insurance companies in that game or no?
I'm sure they are to a portion of it. But again, you know, in insurance, basically they have to have something that they can, you know, in case I have a disaster and I got to pay out claims, I got to turn these things to cash quick.
There's probably some number. They probably can do 10% real estate or something.
Right. You know, 10%, maybe 20%. But, you know, commercial real estate, if I was putting up 440 up for sale, it's not going to sell real quick. It might take a year. It might take two.
Yeah.
In the meantime, if I'm an insurance company and I have claims, I need to get that money fast.
Right. So somebody, it's a group of somebody's.
Right. It's generally a group of banks. I mean, on 440, you could do Chase, you could do Citi, Wells, B of A. They would have enough to write a line of credit for, you know, close to $1 billion. They would do that. Smaller banks generally will try to get a portion of it to look like they are bigger than they are. You know, to see that, hey, I'm really working some big deals. But, I mean, it's really going to be the money center. But, again, most of them now are not going to just go out and just be the sole financer of it. Not anymore.
Well, then you have people down here, and I use the term my buddy, my real estate buddies would say that, like, say these guys around the corner where you just were at the Dunkin' Donuts. Now, that whole block is owned by, like, somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And the somebody, it's low-rise stuff. It's essentially a downtown strip mall, for lack of a better term, right? But it's land. It's land next to the exchanges, what used to be the exchanges, and right next to the train station. So in terms of inventorying land, you almost can't beat it, right? I mean,
true.
And then you have, across the street over here, you have like two parking garages. Actually, they're the same one now, but there's one down the block. It used to be the best way in the world to inventory land. You put up a parking garage, you think the property is at some point, 20 years from now, is going to be worth $1 billion, and you have downstairs, you know, restaurant, two bars, and a cleaners, and those kinds of things, right? You inventory, and then upstairs is a parking garage that is, you know, a cash cow, basically. Now, somebody's going to have the mortgage on that place. Now, it's not a skyscraper, but it's not cheap either. Well, now we see around the corner, and I don't know the person, but I'm going to say the convenience store just boarded it up, right?
Yeah.
Subway boarded it up. The taco joint in the corner boarded it up. So the only people left are the everyday loan place or the payday loan place. And the Chicken Planet, right?
So Chicken Planet, I think the Indian restaurant, and Dunkin' Donuts.
Right. So I'm going to estimate, not that I know, I'm going to say that some of those people owe a minimum $50,000 to $100,000 in rent over the last 6 months. And basically they're out. They're not paying. Now, walk me through that. I mean, where does that... Now, if the property's worth, you know, $10 million, and he's got $1 million mortgage, and he's got, you know, $5 million cash in the bank, I guess everything's relatively okay, right? At least for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the bank will talk to you about restructuring that loan.
But now does the state, and I of course I know some of these people enough to where I will not identify. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I know how much they pay in taxes. Now, does the state really expect to receive, I'm going to say, the $80,000 from this guy, or $100,000 this year? I mean, when he's got 2 out of 8 spots occupied. I mean, how much of that is revenue, and how much of it is, hey, you got this much square feet of downtown real estate? I think a lot of it's based on revenue, right? High rise is how much rent you're making, right? Not so much how much the place is worth, I think. But I'm saying, does the state really expect to get that check? Is there, walk me through this. Or if there is a mortgage and the guy had just enough capital, you needed $1.4 million to, you know, to get the loan, and he had $1.401 million. Now all of a sudden he's in trouble and he's probably not paying his mortgage. How does this all work through? And what bank is liable to own that mortgage? It's not a high rise, but it's a place. Is that going to be one bank, you think, or what?
It depends. I mean, if it was one bank originally when the mortgage was taken out, the answer is yes. The real question, and again, this is not, I generally deal in residential, but in commercial, you know, if the bank is smart and realizes that the property is worth 10 and I have $1 million on it, that's 10%. So there's a lot of equity there. It would be better because for my banking industry, we don't want to be a landlord. That is the last thing the bank wants.
Right.
So the best solution would be to try to find out how to restructure it that I can get some cash flow in. In regards to the state, I have no idea. I'm sure the state would want the money, but then on the back end, you know that these people are going to be declaring losses, and so the state's not going to get any money anyway, because they're going to declare a loss, a total loss on the building, and take that right off on the taxes for the next couple of years. So I don't, you know, the state, that's a good question. I think the state will negotiate. I'm sure they do, because you're right. There are people that don't pay what they should. There's always a workaround. That's why you hire a good accountant. In the sense of a bank in that scenario, it'd be worth my while to do a restructuring or refinancing of it and see what I can get out of it, knowing that there's a lot of equity there.
Okay, but I had 10 places a year ago. They're all paying. Now I got two. The places that left didn't pay me for 6 months, and now the two that are left aren't paying me. Where's the restructure?
Well, the restructure has got to be on the value of the property.
Right.
That's where you're going to do it. The other question is, at that point, if you know that you can walk away, sell it and walk away and let it be someone else's headache, the bank's not going to argue with you on that.
No, no.
It's just a question of when. And I know on my side, on the residential, you go through this all the time. You're talking to people who are struggling but have huge amounts of equity. And you bring up the question, have you ever thought of selling and walking away and buying a cheaper place cash? And that you'll never have a mortgage, you never have this issue. And, you get the responses, well, I don't want to. I've been there 15 years, this or that. And you're looking at it, and this, for example, might be a $500,000 place, and they have a $150,000 mortgage. That's $350 in cash. And
are you finding, kind of just a side question, because I mean this is what you deal with all day long. My Audrey and her pals, they deal with them when they have to, the short sales and so forth. They find, and of course these are ladies that if they have something to do at 9 o'clock, it's done by 9:05, right? So that's
right.
That's the mentality. And of course they deal with these banks and these mortgage service places. And to say they're not like that is an understatement, correct? They claim that the actual system, the incompetence and laziness in the system, that it will take, the reason why it'll take you 8 months to do a short sale is simply because the person can't get it off their desk. That they're that, you fax them stuff and the next day they lost it or somebody else picked it up and send it again. So the incompetence in that area, they must have huge fees. You said that the people are morons. Is that what you find, or is the incompetence in the system part of the problem?
I would say a little bit. I also think that it's the process. Again, the old way was meetings. So it's not one person making the decision. It's a bunch of people in a room making the decision. And, they have an hour and they try to go through 100 cases that they're looking at for possible short sales. They have other things to do. I agree, the system is inefficient. They're getting better at it, but yes, people do lose stuff because there is a process. You have someone collecting the information, then they have to present it, then they think about it. And in my experience, most banks don't make, at 9 o'clock, by 10 o'clock, they don't make all the decisions. And they put it off, and they table it, and they go come back to it. And there's always the philosophy that possibly the market's going to get better, possibly this and that. It's a little of both, but I think the structure is broken. You should have a dedicated team that works on this constantly to make these decisions, get them out to market. The biggest problem is the, money. The banks were going to try to squeeze out as much money as possible. They went through that the last time where they were just saying, hey, you know what? You offered me 35 cents on the dollar, it's yours. And now the bank's realizing, you know what? I could have gotten 60 cents on the dollar.
Well, I have a story for you. I don't know if we should wait till after break or whatever, but should we go break now, man, or should I tell my story? SP Futures is up 11 now, NASDAQ is up 80. Looks like we're going to try and go north here today. We'll see if we turn, but as of now, we're looking stronger by the moment. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities.
Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Jim with us this morning, and he's Matt Weber on the board. You can use Matt Weber's last name.
The artist formerly known as Jim?
Yes, the artist.
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, your buddy, Matty, yesterday, they did him a huge disservice yesterday. They had your buddy Jack. They actually said...
From Twitter.
Yeah, Dorsey finds deal unacceptable, and I'm going... Dorsey, what are they doing? He's Jack.
No one even knows who Jack Dorsey is.
Yeah, nobody even knows who. But he's Pele. He's Yao. He's, you know,
Madonna.
Yeah,
Cher.
Yeah, who's the soccer player? Not Pele. Who's the other guy?
Messi.
Yeah. I mean, you get it. You get a one name. You just got to. You're dying for the day when it's just Matt. Nobody even needs the last. I mean, S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 84. We like retail sales of up 1.9% in September versus 0.7% expected. And I'm going to say that 1.7 of that was increased in prices, but that's just me. You heard it here. Don't have to believe it if you don't want to. Now futures up 81. So I'm supposed to believe, Jim, that man only known as Jim, that lumber prices are up 100% this year, and yet Home Depot's increase in sales has nothing to do with increased prices. Am I really supposed to be that stupid? That Orwellian? I try not to be. Anyway, Asia, Nikkei down 96.4%, Shanghai up 4.1% or flat, whichever you feel like. Hang Seng, however, up 228, that's 0.9%. And they were down heavier this week than the other guys, so we're sort of evening up over there. Europe, these guys were down heavy yesterday. They're back probably half as much today. DAX up 1%, 130 points. FTSE up 76, 1.3. That's more than half. CAC around up 74, 1.5, a little more than half. Not quite a Fibonacci two-thirds, but a little more than half there. U.S. interest rates, I'm sorry, no, yesterday for review, the Dow was down 20, S&P was down 5, NASDAQ was down 54 for being down 350 in the Dow and probably 35 in the S&Ps at one point, so it was a huge comeback. Bonds, 10 years, 0.74, the Bund minus 0.61, Japan positive 0.02, so they're not going anywhere. So whatever the rest of the world's doing up and down, they have not moved. Oil down 40 cents, 40.56, still over 40. Brent down 50 cents, 42.66. Natural gas up 5 cents now, 2.83. RBOB down a penny to $1.16. As the talking heads love Money Central Bank and they love oil. I don't see either one of those going anywhere, but they're on TV and that. Gold up $6, 19.14. Silver up 34 cents now, 24.56. Copper unchanged at 3.07. Maybe we got for us traffic, weather, sports, and also our man Jim, what do you think of the trade that brought the guy to Kansas City last night? What was that all about?
I think that was a bold move. I mean, Le'Veon Bell, I think, wants a ring, and I think Kansas City is the best team for him. I mean, they just lost, Hill, so they're looking for a offset. He's a beast. The question is, can he get along with others? I think if he wants a ring, the answer is going to be yes.
When you're winning, it's easier to get along.
It is. And I think that he realizes that, Kansas City with Reed and Mahomes, that's a combination that he wants to be a part of. I heard a lot of, other people. I heard Chicago. But I know we're too slow to pull the trigger on that. Obviously, KC was not.
Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
That's right. 39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We still have major issues on the Eisenhower due to a crash that happened earlier this morning on the inbound side at Harlem. There was a rollover, a fatal crash with apparently a fiery scene that has crews working on that this morning. And the on-ramp at Harlem to the Eisenhower is closed. And the inbound side is still closed. It's also affecting outbound traffic as well. So you'll want to avoid the Eisenhower altogether. From the outbound side, Old Post Office out to Wolf Road is up to 25 minutes and growing to 390, 35 minutes. So expect a significant stop-and-go traffic on the outbound Ike due to that crash that has the inbound side completely closed. That's the only issue on any of the area expressways right now. No issues at all coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson is all quiet. After that, earlier road construction has been cleared out near Naperville Road. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Off the expressways, one other crash to report. That's Schmale Road out at North Avenue in the western suburbs. There is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, sunshine, cold temperatures, a high of just 55. Right now it's sunny and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 100 today. Right now it's clear and 70. In sports, Major League Baseball, a couple of games last night, and the Astros are back in their series in the ALCS. They topped the Rays 4-3 on a Carlos Correa walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. They now trail that series 3-2 after they were down 3-0. The Braves are on the brink of going to the World Series for the first time since the 90s. They blew out the Dodgers last night 10-2 and now lead LA 3-1. Chief.
So,
by the way, Le'Veon Bell was released by the Jets. There was not a trade. And, because he's a malcontent and they didn't want, and he didn't want to play there. They didn't want him. So they outright released him after giving him a bunch of money. And the, Chiefs, are probably going to pay some sort of prorated, salary by picking him up. But a lot of teams just didn't want to take on the, his attitude and his salary. And he hasn't really been that good the last couple of years. So we'll see if he has anything left in the tank. But if he does, to Jim's point, I think the Chiefs are the perfect spot for him because Andy Reid will get something out of him.
What happens to the signing bonus? The Jets just suck on, basically?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it was a puzzling move for the Jets to sign him in the first place because they weren't going anywhere. So that why you would sign a veteran running back who sat out a year in Pittsburgh because he didn't want to play there, who is, running backs are a dime a dozen. Why anyone would spend a bunch of money on a running back is crazy these days. But Kansas City, they drafted a first-round pick, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's been good but not great so far, and the offensive line has been good and not great, and now they're bringing Bell in, and that'll just take carries away from their young guys. So we'll see how it works, but I think if anyone can make it happen, it would be the Chiefs.
So regarding the comment that everybody's happy when you're winning, now for the first time now, you are the general manager and coach of the softball team.
That's right.
Instead of me. Now, if all of a sudden this thing turns south and your guys are over at the Tripoli under the heater having a good time on the outdoor section, am I going to have to come over and sit next to you by the bar so you're not by yourself?
It's very possible. We're 3-1, but I can tell you after our one loss, I was getting a lot of suggestions.
It is scary.
No one says anything after the wins, but after
it is scary, isn't it?
After the one loss, of course, I didn't suggest back that maybe you guys should catch the ball behind me, but
see, now you can't do that.
You can't do that. No,
no, it's a one way conversation. Anyway, Jim, my story that I catch anecdotally while listening to the ladies watching the baseball game. There was a short sale of some townhouse, I think. It must be a townhouse because it's got a garage. And they ended up agreeing on kind of like a price. It took so long for the servicing company to actually approve the thing that the people who signed the contract and bought it said, screw it, we need a place to live, we got to go find someplace else. So then it was sold again by the same realtor, and now the condo association thought they were getting stiff for $50 or something, so they held it up. So that person said, I got to go get some place to live, I'm out of here. It is now, but every time, you would think that once the paperwork comes to the top and say, we're ready to close today, yeah, well, the person's gone, okay. That the next week, if you find another person, they would say, okay, we're ready to go tomorrow, but not so. It has to start all... The place has now been sold 6 times without a close. And every time, it's the same 3-4 months to work its way through the idiots at the place. Instead of saying, God, we've done this 4 times. Here's all the paperwork. Let's just get this thing off our desk. There's no attitude like that at all. Oh, no. We have to basically bleep around with this one. Do you find that too, or is it...
Yes. Yes, I do.
What can we do with these people? What if we had to go to war with these people? How would we ever win?
That's a good question. That is a good question. Now, it depends on where the market is. I've seen it in New York, where short sales can take years.
But in the meantime, what happens? In order to start the process, educate me on this. In order to start the process, you need a buyer, right?
Correct.
All right. So when you have a buyer and it takes years, what makes you think the buyer? What's he supposed to do for 2 years? He needs a place to live, or she.
That's true. It depends on what the buyer is. If the buyer is a investor, they might wait. I can tell you just in general in short sales, the more parties involved, such as a condo association, the more difficult it gets. Because depending on the state, some states, condo associations can actually foreclose.
But nobody wants a place. Nobody wants to foreclose. That's the point.
And you're right. The condo association doesn't want to foreclose because then obviously that means they're going to have to raise their dues because they're going to have to now wait it out, pay the property taxes, which they hadn't been doing, and everything else. So it just, in general, the more parties involved, such as the other one that you get is... I have seen it where you had multiple mortgages, not just one or two, three or four mortgages on the place. Then it really gets fun because each one is wanting to get a piece of the pie. Now, in general, he who's in first place when they foreclose wipes everyone else out.
I was going to say, the guy in first probably wins that one most of the time.
Most of the time. But depending on the state, again, some East Coast states, it can take a considerable amount of time. They are very consumer friendly. You got to go to court. You can ask for continuances. You could drag it out. Then it gets to a point where the other guys are figuring, well, I already know that you're not going to foreclose for maybe 2.5, maybe 3 years. So I'm going to want to get some money out of this. It just gets more complex. And generally the ones that I see that go out that far, that's, about 80% of the time, that's the reason. There are multiple parties. There are tax liens. There are other liens. Some of these people were self-employed, and they took liens out on the property in regards to their business. So you have multiple liens on the property. It's just a nightmare, best case.
Is there, we've been talking now for... pushing 45. Is there an obvious trade here? We should short Wells Fargo because they're up their eyeballs in mortgages, or we should buy Wells Fargo, or we should find a mid level bank that does a lot of mortgages and buy them or sell them. Is there an obvious trade or not really?
I don't think there is one. Not really. I mean, I know most banks are as, in even the mid-level banks, as fast as they could sell them to Freddie and Fannie, they're doing it. They don't want to keep it on the books. I do know that...
What about the jumbos?
Jumbos they have to keep on the books. Freddie and Fannie do not buy those. Those, you can sell them to, you know, private investors.
Do they, you think, or...
Some of them probably do, yes. Now, I know I did work at Harris a long time ago, and obviously in the private bank area, if I have a $25 million trust that I'm running, and I'll give you a scenario many, many years ago, a kid's family had a large trust. He was a complete screw-up in the sense that, you know, he had almost a negative credit rating, but they would underwrite that loan as a favor to keep the money in the trust because obviously that's the revenue generator, not the mortgage.
Right.
It's that. And they'll keep it because obviously I have enough assets to back a $300,000 mortgage, and even if it goes down, I'll still make it up in the trust.
So, but can you get at, I guess the question is, can you get at the trust if the kid screws up the property?
Generally, I don't know. I mean, you'd have to look at the paperwork, but I do know that they'll do it, you know, because the bank obviously has a interest in it. They generally will look at how much they're generating off of it and figure out the difference, but they'll do it, and they usually do it as a courtesy because obviously you are not the only game in town that... You know, and I've seen it where people have pulled millions and millions of dollars out of a bank because not of a courtesy. And they'll walk across the street and go to Northern Trust, and they'll be, yeah, $50 million. Let's talk.
We like you. Would you want your coffee black or cream, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we were talking, I don't know if you remember, we were talking with your partner a couple of weeks ago, and one of my concerns that, you know, I have, and one of the reasons why I brought you on, other than just knowing, learning the stuff you've been talking about so far, I have a real sense of foreboding with the timing here. I mean, the COVID thing comes in, all kinds of people get sick. I mean, it's not a good thing, blah, blah, blah. Somehow or another, everybody closes down. Not somehow or another. We were told to, or maybe people would have done it anyway, because the thing was pretty damn virulent in March and April, that's for sure. Not so much now, doesn't appear to be. Anyway, so the government does something. They get off their dead ass for once, and they actually force something down to the regular people. They send people a check. Obviously, you're not going to pay too many mortgages or $1,200, but it's something. But if you have a small business, really up to a medium-sized business, for lack of a better term, and some people got money they maybe shouldn't have, blah, 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 but by and large, they covered everybody. And I could argue about printed money and whatever. They covered everybody really till the end of June. And if you were on unemployment, you got covered till the end of July. Actually, probably, depending on what business you were in, if you're a restaurant worker, you did way better on unemployment than you ever did working. So they pretty much, you know, with a debt yet to be paid in the federal budget level, I think they pretty much pushed the economy without a whole hell of a lot of pain, Jim, to end of June, end of July. And then all of a sudden, I think things started to start where people went from unemployment check of, you know, 900 a month to, or a week to 300, you know, or something like that, which is a big difference. Now all of a sudden your rent's in danger, everything's in danger. And now we're October, we're pushing November, and they're talking about another stimulus plan, which looks to me like it's not going anywhere, even though we've recovered, you know, 500 points in the Dow in the last 24 hours because, or 20 hours because somebody started talking about maybe there would be a deal. He made money, whoever that guy was, but the rest of us, I don't know. Anyway, but now I get the sense that all the stuff we're talking about, the foreclosures, the not paying rent, the slamming of doors, it's starting to happen. But in other words, now is when it's happening. It's like, you know, you give somebody the slit with the sword in the fight, well, the guy dies 2 weeks later. That's when everybody starts dying from blood poisoning, right? 2 weeks after the wound. I mean, I get the feeling now that if something doesn't happen now, either a quick reopening, hey, look, this COVID is not killing people anymore, which I don't see happening, or a stimulus package that, you know, the money gets here like in the next week or two, I see the next month or two as being the worst we've seen on the business side. Do you, or am I totally wrong here?
No, I think you're right. You know, I would ask you, I'm as a novice, it looks like, you know, companies are showing profits because they're cutting expenses, and that is a very short-term philosophy.
And I think they're raising prices.
And raising prices. So I'm increasing my margin by doing two different things. I'm increasing prices, and I've lowered my costs because I'm not carrying as many people anymore. I agree. I think that this is a, you know, a good analogy. It's like a Civil War wound. It's not the bullet that kills you. It's the infection. And I think you're right. I think in the next month or two, you know, probably by the end of the year, that this is going to be the infection's going to come back, and we got to make a decision whether we open up the economy again and run the risk that we have a second wave. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. I think most places have gotten better at it. I think we have seen a decline. But like I know in my market that this foreclosure stuff it's going to hit ahead probably in the first quarter of next year. No question.
Are people going to be still living in their houses? Do we have enough buyers to throw them all out and put new people
in?
I don't think so.
I think that we have, as someone put it, I think we have an inventory shortage. We haven't built enough houses. So just putting on other houses isn't going to, I guess, you know, in my opinion, strictly, it's just a short-term thing. Because obviously the economy does better when we are building houses. People are buying houses, getting new houses, this or that. Right now you're seeing everyone who can refinance to refinance. But on the bank side, they're being cautious. I don't want to give out a new mortgage knowing that this person could get laid off in the next month. Because that's a real possibility.
Well, sure it is.
I mean, I take that risk.
I don't think you're not going to get, I've heard, that some places, especially the bigger places, I mean, I don't think, you know, your lakesides or your neighborhood banks are absolutely shutting it off. But I don't see you walking into a Harris today and getting a loan for your plumbing company. I think they've totally shut that off.
Right. I agree. And I think unless we get to a point where, you know, it's a risk. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about possible lawsuits, you know, that, you know, someone brings COVID into the workplace, someone brings COVID into your house, if it's a plumber. But, you know, as far as I know, no one has ever tried to sue a plumber that gave you the flu because...
Well, you prove he gave it to you.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think at some point, you know, depending on the election, we got to do something. We got to get either both. I think the best way to do it is both. We're going to need another stimulus package, but we do have to start getting this economy up and running again.
Well, I'm seeing this, and we talked a little bit about this with our friend Kendall. Obviously, can't get up the same time you can. just saying. Well, so if he listens to the show, he'll say we're dissing him, and we are. I mean, there's no question we're dissing him, aren't we, for not showing up.
Yes, we are.
I mean, let's make no mistake about it. When somebody says, were you dissing Kendall on the air? The answer is yes. Right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, and he's free to listen, and he'll get a laugh out of it. I mean, are we, when we, what happened during the 2008 thing, and I'm kind of reading between what you say, is that we booted a lot of people out of their house where somebody maybe got laid off or did something. Where somebody said, look, I can't afford to live here anymore at 6.5% because my wife or I, both one of us got laid off. Matter of fact, I mentioned a name earlier. His name also is Jim. Doesn't want me to use his last name either. He's a lawyer. He just does closings for people just in family and friends and stuff. And he goes, the biggest change, and this is 20 years ago, you probably have a better year on it. He goes, the people are getting mortgages. It's like, let's put it this way, if you fly a single engine airplane, okay, you would think that a twin engine is safer, all right? Now, the assumption you're making is if one goes out, you can continue to fly and land with the other one, that it would be strong enough. But for a long period of time, they made twin-engine airplanes where one of them went out, you couldn't continue to fly with the other one. You needed them both on to move the thing. Well, people are getting mortgages where both the husband and wife have to be working to carry the load, which really doubles your risk, right?
Correct.
But anyway, there were people who were saying, look, my wife got laid off. I can't afford this mortgage. Now, they've never missed a payment, but I would like, if I could refinance, we'd be okay. And they'd say, oh, no, your income, you can't refinance from 6 to 4, in which case that person could still be there. So the person there ended up leaving, and a new guy was in at 4. I mean, I'm starting to sense that that's what's going to happen here, that the person that missed a few mortgage payments that now can get maybe his job back, his or her job back, they're not going to let him back in or her. They're going to sell it to somebody else. And what have you gained?
You're right. It's the theory of redundancy, and you're right. There's really nothing much to gain. It'd be better off to do a workout, do a HAMP program, where you do a streamline, and at least get these people back up and paying.
I would agree, bud. Love to have you back. It was good stuff. I bet we're going to get really good ideas or good tweets on this one. Next time, we can invite him again or not? Just tell him he's out. Kendall. we'll give him one more chance. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 95. Looks like we're going up here. We'll see if we hang in there. We'll talk about it on Monday morning. Have a good weekend.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.